Welcome to the Grow My Cleaning Company podcast with your host, Mike Campion. If you are passionate about the cleaning industry, you are in the right place. Love what you hear? Spread the word and tell the cleaning world this is the place to be. Want more? Check out www.growmycleaningcompany.com for free online video trainings, free ebook downloads, free blog posts, and of course, all the podcast episodes. Everything you need to grow your cleaning company is at www.growmycleaningcompany.com. And now, on with the show.
Welcome to the Grow My Cleaning Company podcast, where I coach owners of cleaning companies every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on anything and everything related to building and growing cleaning companies. If that's you, if you're committed to growing your cleaning company, check out growmycleaningcompany.com. You will find everything you need to create the cleaning company you've always wanted. If you want to be a guest on the show, reach out to our producer, Natalie, at nat@growmycleaningcompany.com, or give us a call at 480-648-5149 to apply to be on the show. We love hearing from you, Cleaning Nation. Today, we are talking with Eloisa Alvarez from It's Cleaning Time. It's Cleaning Time has been serving the Austin, Texas area since 2002 with residential cleaning, with an emphasis on being green. If you want to reach out to Eloisa and her team, you can get a hold of them at www.itscleaningtime.com. Eloisa, say hello to Cleaning Nation.
Hello, Cleaning Nation. How are you?
We are fantastic, Eloisa. So glad to speak with you today. Tell us about where you're at now, how many employees you have, how you found the business, how you found us. Give us your story.
Okay, so as I said, I have been in business since 2002, and I have actually six crews that work regularly for us that are subcontractors. Our main conflict with this is that we want to grow the business exponentially from $500,000 a year to $1 million a year in 2 years. Well, that's my goal. And I realized that it's not going to be possible having subcontractors because I don't have control on the quality. We basically are a green cleaning business company, and we have a huge amount of competition in Austin, Texas. So we really need to do things that are above and beyond. We have no control with our subcontractors. So Basically my conflict is how to go from subcontractors to contractors and being able to manage that financially on top of all the training that has to go on into hiring new people, etc.
All right. That's a great, I love the question. I'm excited to dive in. Tell me, so how did you find Cleaning Nation? How did you get in contact with us?
But most of the time, they refer each other.
Most of the time what?
They refer each other.
No, how did you get in contact with us? How did you get on the show?
Oh, well, Natalie called me, and then I researched your videos, and I just love them. I think they are so illustrative and fast and to the point.
Okay, perfect. Well, shoot, let's jump in and see if we can't help you get where you're at. So right now, how many 1099 contractors do you have currently?
We have eight.
All right.
Actually nine, but full-time, we have six.
Okay, so six full-time and then two or three part-time.
Yes. Now, what I mean with this is that I hire one person, they hire more. So actually working outside on the field, we have a minimum of 12.
Okay, so there you kind of almost act like what the franchise model is, where you hire a team, you hire one person to do the job, you pay them X amount per month, and they can hire people or handle however they want to handle it, they can handle it. So they've got other people that aren't typically associated with you.
Yes.
Okay, perfect. And you want to move to the problem with that is you don't have control. So you get complaints and you're like, well, I can't really make them do anything because they're not my employees. I can just fire them and hope that the next guy's better, but there's no guarantee that he or she will be better.
Exactly.
Okay.
There's just, I can inspire them or don't give them any more work, but I cannot, I cannot enforce them because I cannot give them the product or give them or obligate them to use our product.
Right, you can't have
strongly recommend it.
Okay,
so it is like if you want to work for me, these are the products that you have to use.
Got it. All right.
But then I go and visit them, and they have pine full on their butts.
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
Yes, then I visit with them and I find pineapple on their bucket, or things that are totally non-green.
Right, just residential products, not commercial, for commercial. I didn't mean residential, like you can't clean homes with them, but store-bought products, not commercial grade cleaning materials.
Exactly.
Okay, so you want to know how to make that transition. There's a couple ways you can do it. One would be the rip the Band-Aid method, which is you go to all 15 or so of your employees or your 1099 and say, we no longer do 1099. You are fired as a 1099 employee, and I am accepting applications for employees who wants to join. That is going to be quicker, more direct, but probably more painful in the short term. The second way is to go forward with new jobs, only hiring employees and start phasing those people out. Do you have a feeling as to which, I don't know that we've got time to go over both scenarios. Do you have a feeling as to which of those would suit your business and how you'd like to see the transition made?
I would say more likely the second one.
Okay. So that's a little easier. First of all, you have to make sure that you communicate with the old staff what's going on. You don't want them to hear it through the grapevine or be a lot of gossip or, where they kind of get nervous, like what's going on. So you're probably going to have a big meeting and explain to them, hey, we are going to an hourly program. So everybody going forward, we're not hiring. Your jobs are safe. And the way the deal that we have will continue as is indefinitely. If you would like to move, I think there's a lot of benefits to the becoming a W-2 employee. If you would like to move to W-2 employee, I'm happy to talk to you. And as long as you're doing a good job, we'll transition you over. If you would like to stay as a 1099, everything's the same. As long as you do good work, your job is secure. Of course, if you do bad work, we're going to fire you. And that has nothing to do with our transition to W-2 employees. Mm-hmm. I think if you give them the option and explain the benefits, some of them will transition on their own. You won't have to force them. They'll go, well, that sounds like a better deal for me. I'd rather do that. So start with that foundation. The second thing is, what we're really going to have to do is create a culture. And you can still do it with just, not for you, Eloisa, because it doesn't sound like this is what you want. But for the other listeners, you can still have a culture with 1099 employees. It's just a lot harder. You just have to work harder at it. So you really want to identify your core values, because the problem with hiring minimum wage labor is the competition is high. There are 100 crappy jobs that they can do for 10 bucks an hour or whatever near minimum wage. They're not making 100 grand a year. These are generally hourly laborers, and there's lots of competition for them. The good news, so that's the bad news. The good news is it's terrible competition. All the jobs suck. They know that they suck. So if you just give them a little appreciation and have a culture and some core values that resonate with them, you're going to really show up as something special. So the first thing is, do you have any core values? Do you have things that you believe strongly about the kind of how your company should look and feel for the employees that you have?
Yes, we definitely are grateful for our people, and we treat them with a lot of respect. We give them a really special treatment, more than any other thing, just appreciation.
Okay, perfect. So that's something that you want to establish and say, really kick that up.
Respect. Respecting the job atmosphere. We give them a lot of training into how to protect themselves from chemicals. We don't allow bad behavior from clients to them. We respect if they want to do a job or not. We say it's okay. Like, if it is out of their, sometimes we find impossible things. No, and we give them the possibility to say no.
Okay,
like, so we don't force anyone. So that is basically our culture. It's a culture of respect and appreciation.
All right. So you need to take those core values and be very clear in exactly what that looks like. So you can't just say, a start would be respect, or mutual respect might be a good core value, but you want to have some really clear ways of what that looks like. Like, we don't allow customers to verbally abuse our employees. We don't verbally abuse our employees. We don't allow our employees to verbally abuse one another. This community, exactly, if you'd like to be a part of it, has to be something special. And you have to really, if that's what you want, if you really want to be respected and you're willing to respect other people, this is for you. So you want to transcend or get above or outside of that mindset of, I give you an hour of time, you give me $10, and get into, this is a community that's part of your life that you're really honored to be a part of. And by the way, you happen to make money here as well. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, we need to create a system for attracting employees that is full of those core values. So instead of talking about, you can make this much money and you have to have a driver's license and all this sort of nonsense. You want to talk about, you want to put verbiage out that's going to attract people that are looking for an environment of respect. And the last thing is you've got to have an onboarding process that's probably a lot more detailed than what you have now in terms of here is what it looks like to be a member of the community. So certainly you're going to teach them how to train and you're going to have a system of this is how you clean, but that's probably going to be 20% of it. 80% of it should be all about your core values and what it looks like to be a part of this community and how that should feel and what you can do to get kicked out of the community in terms of if you're disrespectful to somebody, if you're dishonest or whatever your personal core values are. Hey, if you live these core values, you're going to love it here. You're going to make a lot of money. You're going to have a lot of fun. We're going to be best friends. If you don't trust these core values or they're not important to you, you're not going to fit in and you're going to be really unhappy. So really what you're trying to do is move from a group of kind of guns for hire. I give you money and you perform this task to a community of people working together for a bigger purpose than themselves. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. You had mentioned about cash flow issues. You were concerned about that. What? Tell me your concerns on that piece of it.
Well, my numbers are so that if I change right now, like let's say that I change everybody, I won't be able to make it financially because my cost is higher. So if I'm thinking that I'm going to be paying $12 per hour and the amount of hours that they are going to be working, another concern for me is the people that I have right now work extra hours because I pay them a percentage of the job and they agree or not to do it. And when I have employees, I need to cut it to 40 because I'm going to give them a good payment, but if I go to the extra hours, I might overflow it might be much more than I could, what I can really afford from the money that I'm getting to apply.
Okay, so that what you just said is a bit of a concern to me. If you are in a for-profit endeavor, meaning you are profitable, you make more money on your jobs than you pay, you should never be overflow, should never hurt your cash flow. That should just mean more profit. If your margins are so thin that you're not sure you can afford it, we've got a different problem. What I hear you saying is the jobs that I do, I can afford if I 1099 people, but I cannot afford if I pay them hourly. Is that correct, or am I misstating what you're saying?
Yes, that's what I'm saying, basically.
Okay.
It's a little bit more. It is like 10% extra of what I'm paying right now.
All right. Well, first of all...
Not because I'm not saying that, like, they are making more money if I pay them as subcontractors. Definitely that is a pay as employees because they are holding those taxes. But when I add the salaries plus the taxes, it increases, like the whole operation increases 30%.
Well, keep in mind, you're not going to pay an employee the same amount of wages you're going to pay a contractor because the employee is responsible for his own unemployment insurance, their own social security matching. There's a lot of fees that you as an employer will pay to an employee that if they're just 1099, you won't pay. They're responsible for themselves. So you would pay less. You're still going to pay whatever market value is for employees, and they're probably going to earn 80% as much as your subcontractors are, but the subcontractors are going to have to absorb those costs personally. So,
exactly.
So mm-hmm. It really shouldn't have, if you're charging the right amount for your jobs, moving to hourly pay shouldn't affect your cash flow in a negative way. That clear it up, or am I missing something on your end?
No, absolutely. I'm just going to find out if I'm charging correctly.
Right. So if you're not charging enough.
Or if I'm a little below.
Right. If you're not charging. Hold on, Eloisa. If you're not charging enough, it doesn't matter how you pay your people, right? You can't fix a bad business model by changing from 1099 contractor to employee or vice versa. So they're two separate issues. I don't want you to get them confused. One issue that I would attack first is, am I charging my customers properly? If you're not charging your customers properly and you've been able to, and you feel like because of you maybe haven't been paying your people enough and you were able to get away with it because they're subcontractors, you need to fix that problem first and then fix the subcontractor problem. But don't put them together. Do you see how they're separate problems?
Okay, that's not a problem. Yeah, totally. That's not a problem.
All right, any other
My attention has been wrong into how to pay them exactly the same as the subcontractors instead of 80%. Instead of 100%. And that is where my attention needs to go. I want to compensate, like I want to compensate with paying higher than other companies instead of giving more value to working for us. So I need to find like a balance in that so that I can pay them competitive with the other companies and give them more in a personal way than in salary.
Well, yeah, and let me, that's a good balance to look for, but I also want to encourage you. And I always paid, you know, 10 or 15% above what I think they could get out in the market. So I'm not advocating that you pay under or try and cheat your people. But I found that people didn't come to me, and we had so many people that wanted to work for us. People didn't come to us because we paid more. They didn't even know that we paid more. They came to us because of the culture that we created. So I want to really encourage you to focus not on paying more, because you'd be shocked that people would prefer recognition and appreciation and feeling loved and part of something big. They will go to that for less money over more money. And, you know, I have a private client that was talking about in his community, Chase has a call center that's a really big competitor, and they have health insurance and they pay more money. And he's like, how can I compete with Chase? Well, Chase just eats people up and spits them out. It's a call center. It's a crappy job. If he's doing a good job building a community and building something special, he can actually pay less than Chase and people and have a better quality employee because he's got the people that are there for the right reasons. You don't want people that are like, well, you pay me $12 an hour, I'll do it. But if someone pays me $12 and a nickel an hour, I'm going to leave you and go there. So I'm not saying don't pay fairly, but don't think that that's what is attracting your employees. That will attract the wrong kind of employees. The way to attract the right kind of employees is community and culture and shared core value. So I just want to encourage you to not overvalue pay. Does that make sense?
Yes.
All right, cool. Hopefully that was helpful. Let's hit the lightning round and give you the opportunity to give back to Cleaning Nation. I'm going to ask you three quick questions. You are going to give three amazing answers. Question number one, what's the best piece of advice you've ever received?
Keep going.
Keep going. All right, perfect. I like that. What's the biggest mistake you've made in the cleaning business that maybe we can learn from your mistake and save ourselves from that headache?
Not addressing properly when somebody steals something.
Oh my gosh, that is...
Not believing the client, like really believing that that was impossible.
Okay, so you had a theft report and you kind of didn't want to believe it and you didn't deal with it and it probably ended up biting you in the butt.
Yes.
Okay, yeah, thank you for sharing that, because that's, I hate to say that, but that's real in our industry, and that's important. It's easier sometimes just to tell the client, oh, my people would never do that, move on. But just like Eloisa's experience, that can really bite you in the butt. All right, what's one idea that the listeners at Cleaning Nation can put into practice today that will improve their business or their lives, make it just a little better, something they can implement right away?
Well, there's one thing that I do for my people on Fridays when I cook for them. In the morning, I do just quesadillas with salsa and beans. And we have a moment of relaxation before going to the deep work of Friday and Saturday. And this has created a good community. Like, they know they're going to be busy in the morning. Donuts didn't work for us or things that are sweet. But when I make for them quesadillas or anything that is salty, they appreciate it very much.
Gosh, it
creates community.
I was just going to say, it sounds like you're doing a pretty good job creating community already with the contractors. I think once you move to employees, you're really going to be able to take that to the next level and see even more benefits. Thank you for sharing that. All right. Eloisa, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for sharing your passion and your desire to grow. I appreciate you. I know that Cleaning Nation appreciates you. If you want to check out Eloisa's show notes page and discover everything you need to grow your cleaning company, of course, you know it's at growmycleaningcompany.com. You can leave your questions, your comments, your rude remarks. I will see you there.
Congratulations. You are now 16% smarter. Still can't get enough cleaning goodness? Go to www.growmycleaningcompany.com for more of the good stuff. Ever want to be rich and famous? Owners of cleaning companies, as well as industry experts, can apply to be featured on the show by emailing our producer, Natalie, at support@growmycleaningcompany.com. Until then, don't miss out on all the latest cleaning industry lovin' at www.growmycleaningcompany.com. Check it out now.